All right, here we go on a Monday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Hope everybody had an incredible weekend. We've got a hell of a debut coming our way tomorrow. We'll talk more about it. I can't wait to see what the Kauffman Stadium is going to be like. I mean,
I know we'll talk more about it tomorrow, but I know, sure.
It's going to be epic. That's what I'm looking forward to, if you want to know. Like, watching this past weekend of baseball, we'll get into how it went down and everything, but just knowing what's about to happen at Kauffman on Tuesday, and then I looked, and it's going to be perfect. It'll be like 88 degrees. It's going to be hot. It's going to be sunny. No rain. No, not going to ruin our event tomorrow night and everything. It's going to be awesome. So that's what I'm fired up about.
Just being out at the K, yeah. Watching Jack Caglione's home debut.
Yeah, and he pretty much said kind of the same thing, that he's looking forward to this home debut more than his MLB debut that he had in St. Louis. But no, it was a good weekend. I got to go to the pool yesterday a little bit, you know? Nice just sitting back out there. So a little
less busy weekend. Was it warm enough?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Those first few weeks of the pool where you're like, it's so cold. I didn't mean like warm enough outside. I mean, it was the pool water.
Yeah. You know? I didn't have to go in the pool that much. Sometimes, you know, you feel like you got to stay in the water. It was not one of those days where you feel like it's so hot, you got to stay in. No, it's just like after a while, you're like, okay, I'm a little warm. You hop in, you go back out. Just enjoy the weather. It was nice.
Okay, not bad.
I saw you. Were you at, the pool 2 weekends ago? Not like this past
two weekends ago. Yeah. Busy weekend of, you know, like
dance stuff
and family stuff. Not too much dance stuff. Not terribly bad, at least on that end. But you know, a little bit inside that range, and then today's Ruby's birthday, so I started making cakes last night.
Cakes, plural?
Well, it layered cake.
Oh, okay. You said cakes.
I made just like the cake portion of the cake, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I'll do the frosting later today.
Gotcha.
And then yes, cakes being the layers, not. Although in fairness, she has every year she makes very specific cake requests.
All right,
and so. Because of the way the dance lined up, she's got it'll just be us tonight. Family, something small, we'll open a couple of presents and cake, whatever. Then in a couple of weeks, she'll have her like birthday party after we get back from Texas. And she has two different specific cake requests for each of these.
Okay.
This one is a Hello Kitty cake. I'll let you know how I do later. I dyed the inside of the cake already, kind of like a light pink red color. And then I'll do the frosting red later. And then the later this month one, she wants a wicked cake. But she wants it half pink and half green, and I've never actually tried to do that. And the decoration part is where I really come up short.
She's asking
flavor.
She knows you're the one making this too.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, they don't.
She's pushing the limits.
My wife or I have made every cake for them for all their birthdays, and so they know that they're asking a lot. So we'll see.
Yeah.
See if I can tackle the wicked cake later.
You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. We'll go ahead and get the video stream up and running shortly as well. Facebook, Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, X. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of our show or any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. Makes it easy if you hit that subscribe button. But let's talk about the weekend that was in Chicago for the Royals. They lose the series to the White Sox. There's no other way to put it. That was disappointing as heck because we all know that this is
White
a team that they have beat up on going back to last year, and they needed those wins to make the postseason a year ago. This year, heading into the weekend, they had 9 games left. They still have 6 left against the White Sox. But you go in, you are clearly the better team. It's a reminder that baseball can happen. But you feel like, at minimum, a series win was the expectation. And you were hoping to have some serious momentum going into Tuesday's game against the Yankees. Now, you salvaged the series yesterday, thank goodness. And Michael Lorenzen also,
pretty dicey there in the ninth.
Yes, yes.
Pretty dicey. Richards.
Well, he's going to get DFA'd. Come on now.
He had a rough go.
He's going to be DFA'd tomorrow. It's very obvious, don't you think, at this point in time? I mean, he's 32 or 33.
I don't think he's long for this world, no. Yeah,
That'll get sorted out on its own. But no, they needed that win yesterday, to say the least. But what it does now is it puts more pressure on this week and what you need to do to keep pace. You're, a game and a half out of a wild card spot. You need now to steal one maybe you didn't think you were going to get. Against the Yankees or coming up in a few weeks or a few days, the A's even over the weekend. Like that, those become series that you need to win. You got to find one to make up because you assumed that, okay, you're going to beat up, we're going through the numbers, all right, beat up on the White Sox, beat up on some of these lesser teams because your track record against winning teams hasn't been the best. Well, you lose 2 over the weekend to Chicago. So now can you surprise people? Baseball's weird. You lose a series to the White Sox. Can you win this series against the Yankees starting Tuesday?
I think that's really what stands out the most, other than the like frustration over you played horrible over the weekend.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness, the Friday game was 2-2 in the seventh. You had a massive blow-up inning. They didn't.
That 30-minute stretch was that was brutal.
Oh, I turned it
brutal.
Off.
Brutal.
Oh, we got to, like, when the fifth run crossed, I was out. I was like, okay, it's not the night. It's a Friday night. I'm going to do other things with my time. It's not going to be the rest of my evening tonight. So I went ahead and turned it off right there. Saturday, without a fight, a whisper maybe of an effort, it seems like, in that one. But then on Sunday, they got control of the game. They got down 2-0. I'm like, oh my gosh, are we going to have to come in on Monday talking about them getting swept?
Well, they would have been just been
by
500.
The White Sox. Right. And then they got the, you know, the big home run from Salvador Perez, the homer for Bobby. And I'm like, okay, Cags with a 4-hit game, which we'll talk about here in a minute. And then you walk out of that game still feeling almost like you got swept in a weird way because that ninth inning was so dicey. And then I have to go in and defend once again. This feels like the same way we opened the show last Friday. What did Q do wrong? He was in a, he had a 5-run lead. All he asked Richards to do was not put all 5 guys on base that he faced. I'm not even kidding. I saw a guy on Twitter being like, he should have pulled him before he loaded the bases. He can't do that.
It's a minimum.
He has to face 3 people.
Yes.
And so, like, this whole point is, like, I think what I've decided is, has there ever been a manager in Kansas City you all liked? Did you like Ned until he won the World Series? You didn't, because I remember covering it during the time you hated him. You certainly didn't like Matheny, and I'm not saying you should have. Like, what's the manager you did like?
Yeah.
Because I don't see still strategically what Q is doing wrong with the limited pieces that he has available at his disposal at any given time.
Yeah, I think what happens in baseball when we talk about players, or in this case, a manager, baseball, there's tons of failure inside of baseball. Tons. It's just the nature of the sport. You play 162 games. We all know, you know, if you're a 300 hitter your entire career, right, you're a Hall of Famer, right? We all know this kind of stuff, and that's failing 70% of the time. So in baseball, even as a manager, you're going to make decisions, and of course, some of them are going to backfire on you. But yesterday's was bizarre, and I'm not saying that every single thing Q does is 100% correct, and I would do the exact same thing every single time. No, that'd be crazy. But yesterday, to me, was not the day to jump on the hate on Q train that social media apparently is on, and people have made their mind up, and that's fine. But you're right. I don't think anybody in any city really likes their manager. I don't know if anybody does. People always love to complain about the manager. It's just very easy to do.
The players are more responsible always, in
right,
my opinion.
But no manager, when you're up 7-2 in the ninth inning, no manager's putting in their closer.
Not unless it's to clinch a playoff spot in September.
Sure. But in June, you're up 7-2. Yeah, you have an off day on Monday, but what's wrong with 2 off days? You know what I mean? And Carlos Estevez has been great. They were hoping to not have to use their best guys in that spot, and that's how most managers would approach it. I have no issue how the decision-making went. Of course, the fact that they had to bring him in anyway was not ideal, but that's on the player. Like, execute. And yeah, you can say, well, they just called him up. What do they expect? They didn't call him up just to sit his ass in the bullpen all weekend.
Yeah.
They called him up because they needed his arm. And let's use his arm when we're up 5 runs. I mean, it was the perfect spot to use this veteran that's been bouncing around for much of his career.
Doubleheader Thursday, close-ish game Friday, close-ish game Saturday, right? Like, to the point that you're using at least the middle guys, right, where you're kind of getting through there. So, yeah. When you're up 5 runs in the ninth inning and all you're saying again is don't completely implode, the person I blame there is Richards, not Q for putting him in. But
I think people would have, on the flip side, if Q would have brought in Carlos,
for sure,
people would have said, well, what are you wasting him for? You're up 5 runs. You give him some rest. I just think it's a lose-lose spot. But fortunately, they did not completely blow it, because then it would be, you thought it was bad just in the moment. So.
Oh, yeah. I do strongly agree with your assumption, but the take is, the one thing I'm learning about, if you lose series to the White Sox or some of these other bad teams that they've scuffled with a little bit, even though they won against a good team in St. Louis late last week, the series, so a 500 road trip gold normally we would take, you are going to have to win more games against winning teams this year. You cannot be exactly like you were last year. You can't lose 2 out of 3 to every New York Yankees team. You got to win 2 out of 3 in some of those series. Not every single one of them. You got to do more than split in some of those series. Again, not all of them. But you do have to find a way to beat winning teams a little more frequently than you did last year. Let's say you either win the Yankees series or later this month win the Dodgers series or whatever. But beat one of those best teams in baseball in a series and actually make a little ground up that way. I do think that that's going to be important for this team. And I'm sure they'll get there. I'm not worried about that part of it. I think right now they still have a good chance to get there because they still can pitch overall. But yeah, the problem still relies typically with some of the execution stuff, some of the timely hitting stuff, although it is increasing or improving. Glad they're back home. Hope they win the series against the Yankees, and then we can kind of wash the White Sox series away for the weekend and feel a little bit better. What stood out the most yesterday was that Jack Caglione finally came alive. And not finally, by the way. He's played all of, what, 6 baseball games or whatever in his major league career? But Jack Caglione with a 4-hit day in just his 6th big league game.
Yep.
Caglione lines it into center field. And the Royals have 2 on with nobody out. Room for Alexander. And the Royals have seen him. Caglione hits it to the gap in right center field. That'll bounce up against the wall. And Caglione will stop at second base with a 1-out double. Up the middle and into center field for a 3-hit game.
Hey, hey, hey. Pump that average up. There you go, Dad.
Nice.
All of them. We'll see him have a perfect day.
Yeah, how about a 4-hit game?
My goodness. That is beautiful.
Those calls over on FanDuel Sports Network throughout the game yesterday. 4-hit day. Had to feel good. Now you get set for your home debut if you are Jack Caglione. It's just a reminder of, again, I know it's not like the world we live in with social media, and sometimes I just got to realize that more, and it shouldn't drive me crazy. But we were getting tweets on Friday.
I know. I just ignored them.
Are you concerned about Cags? At that time, he was 4 games into his big league career. Also, he went 4-for-4 yesterday. There's a chance tomorrow, you know, he might go 0-for-4 again. I don't know, but like the concern thing.
If he goes 2-for-4, he'll be hitting .275.
But the concern thing, no. I mean, it's way too early in the game. The power in terms of home runs, I know people want to see that. He still hasn't even played a full week of baseball yet.
Don't worry. The song I have tomorrow will certainly encourage a home run on Tuesday. Well, I wanted to do the song for his major league debut. You and I made a very last-minute trip to St. Louis, so I didn't have the recording equipment needed in order to do it.
Okay.
So we've saved it for the home debut.
I have not heard it.
And as you
I heard
remember,
you yelling, though, across the...
Yeah.
So this morning when I got into the bullpen area...
You heard me yelling,
you were in the back studio, and I don't know if you didn't have the door shut or what.
Door was closed.
I heard the... I heard a familiar sound of you screaming into the microphone, and I knew you were working on a song. So yes, we're going to discover this one all together tomorrow. The only person that's heard it in this room is you. So
yeah. No one else has heard it to this point, but you know, maybe I'll send it to Vern for his approval or some others to get a little sneak peek. You guys have to listen to it live just like everyone else in this world. Again, I was originally going to do I'm in love with a hitter instead of T-Pain's I'm in love with a stripper, but because Jack Caglione felt like a big power hitting left-hander, felt like he needed like a more rock style song, right? Mm. It didn't feel like it was the, as much as I got close to doing that song, it never was the right energy.
Yeah. People are offering me double the money to veto your song. I can't, I can't do that. I can't do that. Unfortunately.
There's some bribery going on.
I do think, I mean, based on the screaming I heard, there's going to be some moments where I'm going to want to turn the volume down on my headset, I think.
You might want to actually just start with it down a little bit.
Like he's raging or like he's real,
No, it just was
it was loud. And I have headphones on in there, so I don't think I realize how loud
like
I
it sounded like
sometimes.
It sounded like, it sounded like screaming.
Dang, it's a screamo?
It sounded like screaming.
All right.
I pointed out the same thing when people were texting and whatever, because like, you know, friends or whatever, like, are you worried about Cags? Jack Caglione started 2 for his first 21. Bobby Wood Jr. started 2 for his first 20.
Somebody looked up George Brett's numbers, too. He was like hitting under 100 for the first 35 at-bats or something.
Yeah, it doesn't like, it's way, way too small of a sample size. Do you also know that he had 6 batted, David Lesky put out this stat. He had 6 batted balls of over 95, what are called hard hit balls. Before yesterday's game, he was 0-4-6 in those at-bats. The league, all of Major League Baseball, on average, it's .471 in those situations. So, like, I'll just tell you, the hits were going to happen eventually.
The good news is now he's probably going to hit his first career home run at Kauffman Stadium. So now you'll get that opportunity. It won't happen on the road. A Royals fan, hopefully, will catch that baseball. Then you can make a trade and give Cags to baseball. But
do you go up to the concourse for that one? I feel like I don't want to be in the regular seats for that one.
Whoever's in that Quick Trip, you know, with the Fountain Deck
porch,
or Party Porch.
They don't call it the
Fountain Deck, right?
Yeah, Fountain Deck.
Right field there. That seems like the spot for those of you going out tomorrow night. That seems like a pretty darn good spot to be in.
It used to be maybe the even Pepsi party
maybe
porch.
Even rivals.
I suggested renaming it a different name now that they have a different soda there.
Yeah, they got to keep the
and people decided they went QT Fountain Deck is correct. Maybe you know what? I hadn't decided whether or not I was going to go to the game tomorrow. I do want to go, but I've got some stuff. I kind of
go
feel
this
like
week, someday this week, man.
If I'm going to go, I feel like I should go sit. I want to go sit there. I want a chance at Cag's first home run ball. Then I can hold it hostage on this show. Honestly, I'd give it to him. What am I supposed to do?
No, people will make a trade. Look, if you're a fan and you catch Cag's first home run ball, you make a fair trade, you get him the ball back, and you end up maybe with a signed bat. Maybe you get a signed jersey, you get a photo, something like that. And that's usually how that kind of
what
stuff works.
What would you ask for, Cody, if you did get his home run ball? Is there any...
This will be good.
It feels... I got to be honest. This feels like a weird spot to put myself into, right? As a person who's on the air and has now met him a couple of times, it would be weird to put myself in a negotiating situation. I feel like you almost have to do it like you're doing it for like something for your kids or something, so it doesn't come off so greedy.
I think if you're just a normal fan that's out there tomorrow
some
night,
tickets
though,
and a sign,
and you catch it,
I think you do the
trade of the you get the meet and greet. I think that's what you do. If you're a fan, you say, hey,
I get it.
You say you get a chance to meet him, you get a photo, you get a signed bat, you give him the baseball. Maybe you ask for a ticket, and that's
I think
it.
I ask for some crown seats personally. Probably those.
Yeah.
Like, because I don't need the meet and greet.
Because let's also be realistic. You're not catching the 500th home run ball, okay? It's still, as great as it is his debut, but if we're also...
It means more to him than it has
correct
in, like...
value.
Total value.
Yeah. If this was his 500th home run, I get it. You're going to hold out for the money. In this case, if you catch his ball, you got to make the trade. Get him his ball, and then hopefully you get something cool back.
Somebody talking about it, like, what? The $100 that I would miss it. Could you imagine the sickening feeling in your stomach if the home run ball came your way?
The video of it would be epic.
I'd never live it down on this show.
The video of it would be epic, especially if you dropped in and just landed back on the field. So then nobody got it. That would be.
It went off my hands. Oh man, I'd be sick. Sick. That'd be one of those ones. You know what? You just got to bring the glove. You can't screw it up.
There will be more gloves.
Zach Hampel's ass to the ground. Yeah,
he's going to be at the K, isn't he? Ugh. Tomorrow night, there's going to be so many gloves at the stadium. But yeah, you should go. I will not be in right field. I will be a little bit closer the other direction. But that's going to be really cool to see. And hopefully sometime this week, he gets his first career home run and it's at the K.
It's like, can I get anything else off his uniform from like his first home game? Somebody mentioned like his batting gloves.
That's too little.
A cleat.
I think you got to go bat and or jersey, game used jersey or game used cleat.
Like, give me the cleat from this game, so I still have something cool. You don't care about the cleat you were wearing for your first home run.
I don't know.
All the major league debut stuff is already the cleat you were wearing for the first home run. That doesn't make any
sense. Someone says that's not a fair trade. What's the value of the ball? Not as much as you think. It's his first career home run. That's one of those you make the trade and you
$1,000
give the player.
$1,000 bucks. What could you get?
If it was a 500th home run ball, like I totally get you holding out for money on a 500th home run ball. But we're talking about somebody's debut home run ball. That's not a financial one. That's more of a trade for some cool experiences and items and move on with your day.
Yeah. Yeah. And then just remember that you were the guy who caught Jack Caglione's first career home run.
From the 816, Cody definitely wouldn't think of his kids and instantly bargained for another chance in the hot dog derby. That's what
he'd say. I want the hot dog derby tonight. Now.
Every race.
That's what you would say tomorrow.
Win. Even against kids. I don't care who it is. Till I win this race.
But no, it's going to be a fun week out at the K. We'll obviously talk more about his debut tomorrow. I think the drive is broadcasting from Kauffman tomorrow afternoon too. So make sure you go stop by and say hello to those guys as well. Over the weekend though, Drew, I saw you were live tweeting it a little bit yesterday and we had Nate Taylor on Friday and I know people were super locked in the French Open. And my understanding is it was an all-time match, right?
Yes.
I have to ask you this though. We complain all the time about college football games taking forever, or wow, baseball used to take forever. Thank God for the pitch clock and all this stuff. How long was this tennis match yesterday?
5 hours and 29 minutes.
That is absurd. Who's sitting on their couch for 5 hours and 5.5 hours, let's just say, to watch it? I'm not debating how entertaining it was for diehard tennis fans.
One of the greatest tennis matches of all time.
But the casual sports fan, which is always what we talk about, because it's the diehards are going to be there no matter what you do. The diehards would have been there for a five-hour baseball game forever, too. I'm talking about the casual fan. 5.5 hours on your Sunday? That's crazy. So let's just make sure if we're critical of other sports taking forever, can apply to tennis. That tennis match, you never know. It could be 2.5 hours. It could be 8 hours.
I think to have devil's advocate, in this, we sit and watch 8 hours worth of NFL games on Sunday.
Yeah, multiple games.
I understand that, but there's also games that you just throw away games, like the Cowboys and
that's one Ohio State
and Giants
Michigan
are on.
Game
it's like, yeah, hours, you know, it's on. Yeah, I think that if it's something like this, because we spend, like, if you include Super Bowl pregame, we spend more than 5.5 hours consuming the product. I don't like watching pregame for really anything anymore. I just watch the game. So it wasn't 5 hours for me, but there's people who sit all day and watch pregame stuff from 2 p.m. all the way to the end. There are people who watch that on the Eagles Chiefs coverage from 2 p.m. all the way to the end of the game. That's just how it goes sometimes.
In his defense, it's like we do, like, one thing I do seriously think baseball and football and all these other sports, because baseball's kind of led the way. It's better ratings. It's more people watching your sport if you shorten the thing. I think this is one of those, like, you make an exception for gold. I think you got to think about it more like it's a triple overtime semifinal for college football. You wouldn't turn it off for that, right? Like, it's a double overtime NCAA Elite Eight game. It's a French Open final. Yeah. These two guys dueling back and forth, two sets down. I mean, and it really was shot making. It was just like guys going back and forth hitting ludicrous shots.
And look, I'm not a big tennis fan anyway, so I'm obviously not. I'm just saying, if you were the casual person, they were trying to get into tennis yesterday. 5.5 hours is a big time commitment for the casual fan. That's all. And like someone says, you won't see another match like this, you know, until they play again in 3 months.
That was it's the first final they've ever played against each other.
Someone's saying they'll probably play again in 3 months.
I mean, yeah, because they are the number one and number two.
Same people all the time. I mean, it was the same three people for two decades. It was Federer and Nadal
Agassi
and Djokovic
and
for two decades. Yeah. Well, and the two decades before that, it was the same, like, four people. Tennis really is a domination sport. So you do have to kind of like seeing the same thing happen again. Now, this is a better match than normal, even considering those. And a guy, and a comeback, right? Guy was down two sets. And then eventually
he was down
back
to his last point and saved three championship points.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It was the most ridiculous. It was one of the greatest comebacks probably in the history of sports, if we're actually being honest. Like, it was, your back is against the wall, and for him to not only come back but also win, and then
it's an exception.
Did you watch start to finish?
I didn't watch start to finish. I
came in late.
I missed the first set, but I watched from there on out, and it didn't feel like 5 hours. It felt like time. You were so you felt so locked in that the last 2 hours of the match just flew by and you didn't even realize what time it was, I think, just because you got so into what was actually happening in the moment between Yannick and Carlos. It was just crazy. And then Coco, of course, won
as well
for the women, which is great. The first French Open win since Serena won it a decade ago.
Been a little while. But I it's like an exception one.
But you
jumped in at the end, so that's different. It wasn't like the fifth set, but yeah, the same thing is like.
You watched, 2 hours of it?
A little more, probably. Okay. But
time probably flew by. Did you feel like time was, like, it was, like, you were
invested? Well, I didn't know what I was committing to, but like at some point, it's just like anything else. If a sporting event is so intriguing that everyone is dialed in, I'm like, well, I kind of want to see something, what's going on here. And I've watched enough like major tournaments in tennis to understand like what high level play at least looks like. And you're like, it was, again, the thing that stood out was just, it was just like watching two guys in a home run derby for like 2 hours, just people hitting ludicrous stuff for two straight hours. And you're like, okay, I'm invested. I'm invested in the comeback. I'm invested in the rest of this, the two best players in the world, all that other stuff. But would I have made it 5.5 full hours? I would have needed nothing going on. I
can't commit to almost chunk of your day.
I told
you
I watch movies in parts, man. I can't.
That's why I'm surprised. That's why I'm surprised with, like again, my whole thing is not questioning what sounds like an incredible tennis match. Just 5.5 hours someone said it was the second longest tennis match in the French Open history.
It's the second longest slam
out of all. Okay. Yeah. That's crazy.
There was one between, I think it was, they said Djokovic and
Wimbledon or something.
In the Aussie Open went 5 hours and 53 minutes. So, nearly 6 hours.
How tired are you? 6 hours of tennis?
I think that to me is the most impressive thing about the entire thing.
Yeah.
It was like, I was talking to Bree about it, cause she actually was watching with me, and I was like, do you think that you have to be more in shape to play tennis than you do to play really any other sport? Like, I think it's...
No, there's a strong argument.
I mean, it's very much so a marathon sort of athleticism you need to have, endurance-wise.
All right, coming up next, there was big news on Friday night. It was a weird news dump, but has major ramifications for collegiate sports. The NCAA settlement was finally approved. What does it mean for the three locals? And we'll talk about Drew's Pacers in a tied-up series in the NBA Finals. I don't think this is a Drew Nixon beat. I don't think he made this one. No, no. He's shaking his head. He says no. Those come later on in the show. He doesn't. His beats don't get played in the 10 o'clock hour.
This one feels a little too chill for our show.
We're just getting started on a Monday, you know?
Yeah,
we're
just
easing ourselves in a little bit.
Before I scream at you tomorrow during the CAG song?
I was going to say, I'm keeping a low tone today.
We're bringing energy to the show tomorrow.
Tomorrow in the noon hour, we will hear
Cody's. Is that we're going to do it? Noon hour?
That's usually when we do it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
I'd say tomorrow in the noon hour,
only
we'll hear
heavy metal tomorrow, I
Cody's
guess, you know.
CAG's song. Do you have a name for it? Do you have a name for it, or is it just the CAG song?
I do have a name for it, but I fear saying the name might give away what it is, so I don't want to say it yet.
You can't tease?
Fair enough.
I believe saying the name, I'm going to have a hard time saying the name in a way, in my opinion, that won't partially give it away.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Do we know the song, or is it one that... Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to do popular ones, otherwise... Yes. Yeah.
I tried to do a couple of not popular ones, and it did not go great. I'll never dig into Ben Folds Library ever again,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That stuff probably just died. Have you ever been to like a heavy metal concert?
No. No.
I've been to a couple over the years.
What was it? You were about to say something.
No, that's all.
No, you were about to.
Just, I've been to a couple
over the
years,
were about
you know?
To say, well, maybe I can do it this way. You were about to
I thought
tease.
Maybe.
Popular heavy metal bands. That's, you know.
I believe.
Start throwing out
okay,
guesses.
So I haven't officially named. I believe we'll just call it Jack. I believe that's what we'll call it.
I'm going to guess you covered a Black Sabbath song. I don't even know if that's correct.
Dude, I'm surprised you knew Black
you
Sabbath.
Right.
No,
right.
It's because I just Googled heavy metal bands. That's I've heard of Black Sabbath. I didn't think of them. No, yes.
The last couple of times we've covered pop culture things that were outside your purview.
People are upset you're not using Drew's custom beats for the song.
Well, I mean, I'd only heard a couple of those, you know, so I didn't want to say for sure.
Cody didn't approve of any of mine, you pretty much.
There was
saying.
The middle one would have worked for the freestyle, I think. They all sounded fine.
This is going to go
one
of...
But the two were a little too slow.
One of two ways for you tomorrow. I mean, like, either it's going to be a massive hit or it's going to be horrific. Because the metal, that's like, you doing heavy metal is, you know, might be a little bit of a risk for you.
I've been in a mosh pit a couple of times in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've crowd surfed.
People are guessing.
You know?
Jack is back in black.
Look, all I'm saying is that it's Jack.
I could see that might be it.
That's all I'm saying. It. And then we'll all just have to wait until noon tomorrow. It is completed. Okay. Song is done.
All right. So that's tomorrow. We have to wait till tomorrow for Jack Caglione's home debut to hear Cody's song. All right. There was big news, though, on Friday night. It was kind of weird that it happened so late on Friday, and that was the much talked about house settlement when it comes to the NCAA. And a federal judge did approve this $2.8 billion antitrust settlement that really is going to change collegiate sports. And it's allowing schools to directly pay players through licensing deals. And that, of course, goes against what they have protected for decades and decades and decades, this idea of amateurism through college sports, right? That's what it was all built on when it initially started. And there's a bunch of different ways to talk about this because it can impact obviously the three locals, but there's so many questions that are still out there and some things we are not going to get the answer to until it's in practice, you know, a year from now or even during this upcoming football season. There's roster limits now, so that impacts the scholarships, but essentially $20.5 million in year one is what each school can share with their athletes. And they say that represents like 22% of these schools' revenue, media rights, ticket sales, sponsorships. Now, there's still the ability to go through true NIL and have separate third parties move money towards the athlete. But this just opens the door for true money to be shared from the school to the athlete. A couple things. My first reaction was, this is just going back to pre-NIL. Uh-huh. What I mean by that is, if you were Alabama, Georgia, Texas, who we all know the big boys, right? Those players in college sports, when there wasn't NIL, whether it was under the table or whatever, those schools, of course, had a massive advantage. Then NIL happened, and they could pay money, but there was still, you know, somewhat of a limitation how many of the top guys they could pay because, yeah, they could pay the top quarterback, let's say, $5 million. But let's say the top wide receiver also wanted $5 million. The top edge wanted... TCU might be able to, let's just say, offer them $4 million. I'm just throwing out random numbers, guys. These are way too high numbers, by the way. You know,
be more like half a million or $2 million.
And so you weren't able to retain. There are other schools getting the top guys more than pre-NIL. Now with this, if I understand how this is going to play out through the settlement, $20.5 million cap across all sports at these schools, this is great news for Alabama and Georgia.
Because even the playing field, the playing field, if, what school are you going to go to?
If there's a cap, even if there's separate NIL money, if there's a cap, if I'm the top wide receiver and Alabama's basically offering the same limitation that Kansas or K-State or Missouri are offering, I'm probably going to Alabama because their facilities are still better than those schools too. So that's where this is, to me, just getting us back to where great news for the big boys. That's what this does.
Yeah, before, at the very least, and we saw this with like K-State or some others, if you had the right donors spending the right money, you might be able to just overpay for Avery Johnson versus anyone else. Now, if you pay Avery Johnson more than anyone else, you've taken a huge bite out of your ability to sign the rest of your roster. So all it does for the smaller schools is force you into taking much bigger risks in order to get the caliber of players these other schools are going to get for a fraction of the cost because of the same cap. The cap part always bugs me because in no way will this be a revenue share like it is in every other professional league. They're still getting screwed, in my opinion. The NFL, NBA, NHL, WNBA, doesn't matter. They get 50% rev share, right, on their side of the deal, and the players are still getting less, but still have to be capped, which feels silly. But we don't cap anything else. Don't cap anyone in the administration. Don't cap coaches. Don't cap anyone else. They can make unlimited money for whatever reason under all circumstances.
Now, the NFL,
with the players,
in the
it's
NFL,
nonsense.
I hear you. In the NFL, there's not a cap on coaches or GMs.
But I just guess in the NFL, I think they're doing it more based on the idea of equitable, competitive balance. And they're saying, coach, it's not a competitive balance thing. Anybody can spend whatever they want. There's no cap. In college, it is still a competitive balance thing to be able to spend the same amount in these coaches. And they're not doing it under the guise of competitive balance, I would guess. The idea that like Dabo can still make $20 million a year, but we can only spend so much.
Yeah. I mean, look, some of this stuff sounds good in theory, but you know, the fact that payments can still be made through NIL, I mean, these schools and these conferences claim they're going to have enforcement and things like that, but we know how that plays out. Like, how serious are schools and conferences going
to
really take the enforcement? And that's what will ultimately decide whether or not this just becomes a joke or not.
I'm intrigued to see the enforcement stuff because they've got the new thing called NIL Go, which is a clearinghouse, and they've hired the College Sports Commission's hired the former MLB exec who has a history of being involved in investigations and lawsuits, which is going to come from this because of Title IX stuff that's going to happen. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, they're
going to
say, we can't afford swimming anymore, and their AD will still make $6 million a year.
It's going to happen. But I'm intrigued to see what because the purpose of the clearinghouse being made and the revenue share is to push away the booster stuff from direct NIL payments being made. It's supposed to push out collectives, essentially, or at least monitor them more. We'll see if it actually happens.
Because
if it works, then it actually is a really, really good thing for the NIL side of it. Like, it actually is going to be proper NIL and everything like that. If it doesn't, which is, I think it's fair for all of us to assume that it's not going to, because what has really worked out in terms of the NCAA's plans, then it's going to become a lot more of a problem. It's interesting, though, because we're going to learn schools' priorities for their athletic programs because, as we know, certain schools are better in basketball, for instance, than they are in football. Like for KU, very interested to see how this goes. Mm-hmm. For Kansas, I think in particular. K-State, I think, is there as well, but more for Kansas because they have this prestige as that basketball school. Do you dedicate, because I think the percentage that's assumed is 75% of that revenue share, guys, 13 to 16 million, is for football. And then the rest will get dispersed. If you're Kansas or you're Kentucky, because in football, you'd love to compete if you're Kentucky, but if you know you're Kentucky and you're basketball school, you might dedicate more money. You might dedicate $6 or $7 million to basketball and 10 to 12 for football. And then that makes you less competitive, though, in the most revenue generating sport, which makes it a tough thing to kind of weigh.
And that's why we have already started to see this happen for football programs. And it really needs to happen for every athletic program at these schools. And that's more cost. But this is why you got to have GMs now in college sports, because you really have to manage a cap. You have to be able to map out in 2027, in 2029 even.
2 years from now, we got the number one recruit in high school committed to our school. Right. We're going to have to pay him X number of dollars. How do we pay it?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a big challenge and why you're going to start seeing more and more NFL or Major League Baseball, but really NFL, if we're talking football, guys that are high level front office guys that manage the cap on an NFL team, they might get offered a ton of money to go be the GM of a collegiate program because they know they already are used to mapping out the cap.
It's probably even more work than a college. I say, Drew, like to your point, like to have true NIL. The one thing I do kind of hate that the colleges do better than the court of public opinion. The reason why we'll never get true NIL is their fault.
Exactly.
15 years ago, when they got through all the nonsense with Ed O'Bannon and everything else, they could have just created a system that showed some equity for players for their name. They were holding back college players from being able to sell their own autograph. Johnny Manziel couldn't put his name on a football and sell it.
On a football card that was his.
And had they just made the layup decision, which was, fine, Johnny, you can sell your autograph. Here are the restrictions in which NIL is allowed for your name, your image, and your likeness. Not your future play, not the all the other ways we pay players now, or any of these other things. They could have saved themselves a tremendous amount of money.
You mean like $2.8 billion?
Yeah. So if swimming had died, if swimming dies, right, it's not going to be the player's fault who are making money as an offensive lineman at TCU. It's going to be because the NCAA couldn't get their head out of their ass 15 years ago.
Well, and then especially because now, one of the things that we've seen, like all day on, there was really nothing on Saturday other than like the French Open final and what else? College baseball. We're going to see, like, this is, like, we know football is going to be there. We know men's basketball is going to be there. We know women's basketball is going to be there. Those are the big three. But everything else afterwards, who knows what is going to have to happen in regards to travel expenses and everything else that comes along with college sports, because it's a lot of money to run, as we were looking at in the bullpen.
Yeah.
It costs a ton of money to run things in general. And then you add on the conference realignment where Stanford has to travel from the Pacific Coast all the way to the East Coast just to play one single baseball series against NC State. And it's like, this is just not, it's not worth the amount of money that you're spending.
It's going to be tougher than ever to be an athletic director. And look, they're all very well compensated at the power school, but that is, their job got way tougher. And this is where, again, I think a GM's going to have to come and play. But Drew, what you were saying about the Olympic sports, I mean, the roster limits are, I would say actually to me, the most concerning thing out of this is just the idea that you're going to now reduce the number of players, student, we don't have to even use the term student athlete anymore, right? number of players on all teams while making all the players eligible for full scholarships, because the scholarship, even though we're talking about $20.5 million per school in year one, but the scholarship's the same cost whether you're a football player or the scholarship for the swimmer. And so then you're now going to have fewer roster limits. Well, we know who's going to be impacted by that the most. And so, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to Olympic sports in the United States, frankly, because all these universities are going to have to change their philosophy.
Just last thing on this, and I know we're going to talk about the NBA Finals, but to the same, like every statement you guys talk about, and we go back and forth, and we mostly agree on all of this, goes back to, again, the NCAA's fault. Drew's like, you know, it doesn't make sense to travel across the country for baseball. Well, if you didn't screw up the conferences and choose money instead of regional rivalries.
You can also blame the SEC and the Big Ten for that.
That would even be a problem. Yeah. It wouldn't be a problem for USC to go play a home, you know, to go play three games against Rutgers in baseball had you not screwed with the regional aspect of college sports, which is what made it all work. It was like, it's like they're a victim of their own doing, and they're like, I mean, it literally is the meme of the guy riding his bike and he sticks the stick through his spokes and he's like, who did this to me? How are we supposed to afford these Olympic sports? How are we supposed to pay these players? And you're like, you did this. You're the creator of your own problem, I guess, is the argument. Meanwhile, Drew Squad did not have a good game last night.
No, it was not great.
Went pretty poor for the Pacers. The Thunders looked like the Thunder again in their second home game. Not that I think any Pacers fans were delusional in thinking they were going to get both games.
Oh, there's no.
This weekend in OKC. Getting one felt like a massive win, especially because you were down a huge chunk of that game and Halliburton hit the game-winning shot. I don't know, man. After that game, I'm right back where I was. I still think it's Thunder in five. Don't they just look like the better team? Well, like, man, maybe it's six now. That's fair. Maybe it's six now. But the problem for the Pacers is if it's not Siakam or Halliburton, then it's just like, where are they getting the points? Caruso had 20 off the bench against them last night. He outscored anybody on the Thunder last night.
Well, and to your point, ironically, those were the two worst players on the floor, maybe for the Pacers last night entirely, were Tyrese and Pascal. And if you look at the box score, you're going to get fooled because the box score stats don't look too bad for either of them. Pascal had maybe the worst. He might have been worse than Halliburton yesterday. But I think it's a for whatever reason, and I think Mark Daigneault deserves credit for this. He, for whatever reason, his guys are 100% locked in. They know their role. They know every. They execute better than maybe any other team does. Because the Pacers and Thunder are both deep. They're both very good. They can go 9 or 10 guys and play them regularly. But like for Caruso to come in and be as effective as he is, for Dort to be as effective, Aaron Wiggins came in and had 17 points off the bench as well. He had a really good game. It's just very impressive for them all around.
Well, let's just be honest about what we saw in game one. I mean, it wasn't that much different. It's just the Thunder laid off the gas and choked down the stretch. And of course, the Pacers made some big time shots, including Halliburton. But otherwise, game one was dominated by the Thunder as well. So both these games have been dominated. The question will be, can the Pacers, when they go back home, here, what's the next game going to be on? Wednesday night? Yeah, we got to wait a little bit.
Yeah, they spread these things.
Not tomorrow night, but Wednesday night. Wednesday night there in Indy, when they're in their home court, like do they just play quicker? Like, do they just play a little more loose?
They typically play better at home, so we'll see.
Makes sense, right?
We'll see.
That's what they're going to need. But I'll still stick with my six. You're still going to stick with the five
for now. Yeah.
For them to win the series, I think they,
I don't think the Pacers will win the series
for them to win the series. I think game three is a must win. I think the Pacers have to win on Wednesday.
I actually kind of agree. In the sense that they got to get ahead of the series a little bit where they can make a mistake somewhere.
Cause even if, I mean, I guess if they lose, they certainly have to win game four, not to go down 3-1. Right. Otherwise it's wraps, you know, they're going back to Oklahoma City.
I think the Thunder ultimately win the series. The question is, more, does it go five? Does it go six? And is there any way this thing goes seven? But I think the Thunder will end up there. They are the better basketball team. And I think even in the fact the series being tied 1-1, I think that is still very clear that OKC is the better basketball team.
Even after the Pacers won, the odds were what? My -300, I think, is what we looked at on Friday.
Yeah. We'll get to cash out boy at some point. Don't worry.
I got to say that you're bringing out the Wednesday thing. I know it's a physical sport and it's not the same. This is where baseball's postseason does a better job. The idea that if this thing went seven games, that I'm still 14 days away from the conclusion of this series, 2 full weeks away from the conclusion of the series, that's too far.
Normally, like, I think
it's too far. It's weird. It takes too damn
long. For the East and the West finals, they went pretty much every other day. So for them to go, because this will be back-to-back games where they've had a 2-day
break. Why can't we have
a
back-to-back? It's in the regular season. Why can't we play 2 games in a row?
TV purposes. They want to maximize on the TV side of it. But yeah, we'll get to cash out boy. Somebody was texting and asking. He obviously is happy about he's definitely happy about last night's result. He also needs the Oilers.
The Panthers win on Saturday.
Needs the Oilers to win tonight. But he has not cashed out, if that's what you're wondering. He's still very much riding this thing out at this point in time.
And now I know his dad's aware of it. Flying with him.
The fact that he's going with him. I mean, Bleacher
Report. Well, Bleacher Report's flying him and a guest out to the Panthers and Oilers hockey game tonight, I think is what was going on.
How invested have you guys been in the NHL finals this year? They have been tremendous through 2 games.
I'm a very casual hockey viewer, but they have been awesome. I've only watched the third period in the overtimes. So I basically,
you're tuning in at the perfect time.
I've watched the third period. I watched the third period. We obviously saw game one win in OT. There was a goal with, 30 seconds left. And then we saw double overtime the other night. So no, the hockey series has been intense. Like that's another example of, like, as a casual fan, I don't need to watch the entire game. I'll pick it up in the third period and go. I don't need to watch from start to finish. I'm not that locked into it, but third period on, when there's nothing else on, overtime, like, the intensity of that is incredible.
Yeah, that's what it is.
At this rate, give us 5 more of them.
Sure.
Know?
It's like, again, it's a lot like what we just talked about with tennis. It's like, I didn't start it right away. Cause I was like, well, I know it's a good match and I've caught some of the French Open, but I was running errands, I was doing other stuff. Random, normal, weekend person stuff, right? And so I was caught up into that. But then once you realize, you're like, oh, man, this thing's incredible. Same thing with hockey. It's like the first period, it's like, if I miss the first period, I'll be fine. You know, like, I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't watch it if I had nothing else going on, but more often than not, I'm like cooking dinner or something else.
Deciding game or a game seven, then I'll probably be, like, tonight, I don't know, if I'm not going to probably start in game in the first period. I'll probably wait till the game gets a little bit further in and pick it up. But I'm expecting another great hockey game. It sure seems like, I don't know if we're going to get 3 straight overtime games, but I'll be surprised we get a blowout the way this thing has been going. That's for sure.
Yeah, me too. I mean, certainly plausible, but it doesn't seem likely based on the way this series has gone so far. That's all. I'm just curious if you guys are into it as much as everyone else.
I mean, I'm not sweating out quite like cash out, bro, but
no, hard to. Hard to stress that much. Do you get any more one-on-one cards over the weekend? What's that?
Oh, I was going to ask real quick. Would you change your stance if you were able to fly out and go to the game with your kid. Like, let's say down the line, same thing's happening with Desmond, but, and you're like, I don't like this at all whatsoever. You need to cash out. But then all of a sudden you get to fly out to go to these places and you don't have to pay for anything. Are you more on board with the bet then? Or are you still vehemently against where this man needs to cash out?
I could just, if I wanted to fly to wherever the hell the Florida Panthers play, Orlando, I can do that with my $125,000. Like, their free flight is not the temptation for me.
Okay. I think it's
I'll
the attention.
I'll get a red eye.
I think he likes the attention.
I love attention.
This kid, I think, loves the fact that Bleacher Report, he's featured everywhere on social media and all of it. I think that is part of the reason why he has continued to ride this thing out. But at this point, does anybody actually think no matter what happens, he's cashing out?
Like, not now.
I think he is riding this thing out to the... He's either going to lose everything or he's winning $270,000. Well, I don't think he's cashing out.
I think he's going to run.
He'll probably be an indie for game three. I mean, at the rate that he's going.
How could you not hedge? Let's just say the most likely scenario at this point seems to be...
We don't know the new cash
game
out.
Game seven. Yeah. The most likely scenario at this point seems like game seven, right? And the Thunder have already locked up their series.
I hope it goes seven because, look, I hope he ends up hitting it, but I do want him to sweat this thing out. I hope it goes game seven. He has to
sweat
there.
If you win nothing or 270K, that would be, I couldn't take it.
I hope he has to sweat it all the way out to a game seven. Cody still doesn't want him to win.
But, no, I don't.
But I want him to win. I just think he needs to sweat it out.
I was rooting for the Pacers again last night.
You're saying, Cody, you want it to be game seven, overtime, and the Panthers win in overtime to ruin the bet.
That's really like cruel. I'm rooting for maximum punishment.
This kid's gonna be.
That,
this kid's maybe. Gonna be. I mean, this kid. If they end up losing in the way you're talking about them losing, someone's got to keep an eye on this kid. I mean, he's gonna be ultimate low as low as you can get.
Yeah, I'm not rooting for like mental health crisis.
Cody would have disowned him by that point.
I'm not rooting for a mental health crisis.
Yeah, I know you're not rooting for that, but that might happen is what I'm saying.
if he loses the bet, he could have cashed out and prevented it.
He could have, but that's, he's on the ultimate high right now. And boy, he can come crashing down if this thing doesn't hit. All right, up next though, Cody's got a take for us. And it's a doozy. It's a doozy. Has to do with the Royals. And should somebody be getting more than a day off every couple weeks? That's next.